Sandy Toksvig, and thank you for joining me for the News Quiz Extra, coming from the Bishopsgate Institute in London's fashionable The East End. The News Quiz Extra is an extended version of the show. The only problem is, as it's bigger and longer, I look even smaller in it. Anyway, on with the show.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Swindon Advertiser, read by Harriet Cass.
Among the students starting a new budget law degree is Ian Morris, who wanted a career change after 32 years as an investment banker. He said, "I want to qualify as a solicitor and hopefully go into fraud because of my background."
Our thanks to Nathan Hamer for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Bridget Christie. And opposite them on my left, Phil Jupitus and Andy Hamilton. Jeremy, who is ready to rob from the 1% to give to the 99?
Well, seemingly the Pope and the Archbishop of Canterbury, who've been at odds since the days when Henry VIII couldn't keep it in his codpiece and we broke from Rome. They're united in saying that we should have a Robin Hood tax on financial transactions because what's-his-face, Beardy Man, thought he needed to say something about the St. Paul's thing. So he wrote this great long thing in the Financial Times. I think he probably had a bit help with it because it did go into some detail about global financial transactions. And I thought, well, either he's got quite a firm grasp on that or he's had it. Well, I suppose if you're a theologian, you would be able to get through quite turgid stuff. I mean, you know, some of the Bible is a bit dry. You know, St. Paul's letter to his accountant and things like that.
It's actually called the Tobin tax, isn't it?
It's got two names. It's Tobin tax, that's named after an economist, or the Robin Hood tax, and that's named after a roundabout, I think.
Do you not think the Robin Hood tax sounds like a tax where tights suddenly double in price? Is a sort of...
Then there's the Tobermory tax on wombles.
Do you know, when I first came to this country, because I came when I was 14, and the wombles were very big when I...
Yeah,
when
they
I
are to you.
Well, yes. Anyway, there was a big song and it was in the Hit Parade, and I thought it was the Wombles of Wimbledon, common are we. But that's sort of this song about these very common. I'd never heard of Wimbledon common.
I like Ryan Williams, though. It's not, and it's...
Only because you look like him.
Well...
As tribute acts go, it's not the biggest market in the world.
But what I like about him is...
Tonight, Matthew. I should be reading.
That would be good. Archbishops in their eyes. I'd watch that.
Look, I've got a passing resemblance to him. All
strictly
right, can we
popes.
Move on for a minute? But what I like about him is he's so relentlessly reasonable and he's very moderate. There are just occasions when part of me wishes he was a bit of more of an old school churchman, because it would have been brilliant if on Wednesday Hugh Edwards had led the news with "The Archbishop of Canterbury gave a speech today where he told the entire banking community that they were excommunicated. So now they can all burn in hell."
He was criticised, wasn't he, for not speaking about the protesters earlier. It took him 2 weeks to make a formal statement. But it is the church, you know, church. It's been going since 1534 and they still haven't decided when Easter is.
That's true.
Is it March? Is it April? It's a half-term nightmare.
I know.
But he's now got the support, hasn't he? Ed Miliband and David
David Cameron said he hates the rich and he knows that capitalism doesn't work and he's only been posing as a Tory, but by night he goes out and hangs bankers under bridges.
I think this transaction tax sounds like a very sound idea because it fundamentally is going to be a tax on panic. It'll penalise people who make too many transactions. There are a lot of people in the city who make a lot of money out of panic by sort of stampeding the market. I think a tax is the answer, or we just find a way of recalibrating the levels of panic in city traders. So yeah, I think to do that, you have to change their definition of a potentially dangerous crisis. So I think that if by law you said that all city traders have to trade at their desks, but that the desks are chained to a leopard. I think that would calm the markets quite a lot, because the imminence of the leopard would dwarf any problems with the Eurozone. I mean, you need an outlay, you know, it's a lot of leopards you've got to buy, and some traders might get eaten. But fundamentally, it'll do a lot for market stability.
When you hear that there's a Vatican report recommending widespread financial reform, my initial thought was, well, they've got it absolutely bang on with child abuse and AIDS. Their financial advice must be very sound.
Yeah, but the Vatican is getting a bit more modern. They've actually updated their advice on wearing condoms. They said it's all right to wear a condom in certain circumstances. Sex, presumably, is one of those. Job interview, not so much. Unless it's a job interview with Durex. But even then, I think that's probably trying a bit too hard. I've always wanted to work in condoms. Do you know what I mean? I think it's probably too ingratiating.
As the Church of England pauses its legal action against the St. Paul's protesters, the Archbishop of Canterbury has finally spoken out by writing to the Financial Times endorsing an introduction of a Robin Hood tax. In fact, it is possible that he's been writing letters in the Financial Times for weeks, but no one had actually noticed. In his article, the Archbishop backed a report from the Vatican. And I do love that the two churches agree on complex financial transactions, but can't see eye to eye on whether a woman is allowed to read out from their big book of stories. Two points to Jeremy. Bridget, which Greek tragedy is leaving them in ruins?
Great, I get Greece.
I know.
Okay, so Greece spent too much money and didn't pay their taxes, and then the EU said, oh, we'll bail you out, and this has taken months and months. And then last week they reached an agreement, and George Papandreou said, oh, thanks very much. And then the other day he said to them, no, hang on, I'm going to put it to my people to see if they want your money or not. And Merkel and Sarkozy said, no, you've not understood. Then he was going to resign, and then later on he said he's not going to resign and he's scrapping the referendum, and the leaders of the Eurozone have said if you don't take this bailout you're not getting any more money from us, and that's it, and it's a right old mess.
I'm a father of two daughters, and Papandreou could not be more like a 15-year-old girl than he's being right now if he was reading a Twilight novel and had a Justin Bieber poster on the Greek cabinet wall. It's this whole, oh, we're having a referendum. It's literally, it's like, I'm getting a tattoo.
I think what's really happened is that he knows he's finished and he's just thinking, right, I'm just going to arse about every minute of every day, and he'll probably appear in Parliament in Greece on Monday and special live televised announcement and do an hour of expressive dance.
Wouldn't it be brilliant if they got some economists into Greece and they investigated about the whole Greek financial problem and they traced it right the way back to crockery smashing?
That's true, actually. That's always
bothered me. Because we've been smashing plates all these years.
But, you know, I was in a Greek restaurant many years ago, and there was a lot of enthusiastic plate. It was advertised, you know. You come in and you smash the plates. But I never understood that they have a pile of particularly cheap, worthless plates.
Rubbish
plates. Everyone was smashing plates. And I just picked up these plates and was like, smash, smash. And I just got frog marched away because I'd picked up their best plates.
You slinging spode around the room.
Yeah.
Do you know, there's an absolute true story about the mayor of Moscow. His daughter was getting married and he wanted to have a really impressive tea for her after the wedding. And so he got from the Hermitage Empress Catherine's tea service. What he had forgotten is that it was customary to drink tea and then throw it, the whole cup, into the fireplace, and then smashed up the most valuable tea service in the world. He's no longer mayor of Moscow. Just so.
The real scare is Italy, isn't it? I mean, where the Greeks, in a sense, do have the EU over barrel is it's about stopping the contagion spreading to Italy. And Italy is, I think, a sixth of the EU economy. It's too big to bail out. And there's obviously a lot of concern about Berlusconi's leadership. And apparently, this week, he turned up with another rescue plan written in pencil again. Although, to be fair, I don't think that his finance minister had very long to work on the rescue plan, because she only gets 15 minutes between dances.
Did you see that he was supposed to release his second CD of love songs this week? Who knew it was a second one? He's written all his love songs, and he just thought it wasn't the best week for it.
Is it now 1,000 trials, isn't it, that he's been a leading player in? Can you imagine if David Cameron said, well, yes, I have been involved in 1,000 criminal actions, but and I may possibly have slept with a 17-year-old prostitute, but, you know, I think here's some songs.
Papandreou, I noticed he has made a bit of a mess of things, but he would be a fantastic marriage counsellor. I mean, Sarkozy and Merkel could barely look at each other last week, and... yesterday, they couldn't keep their hands off each other the other day. So if you're having relationship problems at home, just get George to pop round and be a bit mental, and then you'll appreciate what you've got at home a bit more.
You know, I cannot get an image of Angela Merkel and Nicolas Sarkozy out of my head now.
Did you see he did a joint press conference with Barack Obama, and it was hilarious because at the end of Barack's speech, he was saying how great they got on together and they go back and there's such a history between France and America. And then at the end, Obama said, and I just want to congratulate my friend on the birth of his daughter, and thank goodness she's inherited her mother's looks and not her father's. But there was a delay on the translation, right? So Sarkozy was looking really, really serious for ages after he said it. I thought, oh no, that's not gone down well at all, while Obama was stood there going, it reminded me of a gig I did a couple of years ago in a tent to about 15,000 people, and you have to wait when you do a gig with such a big audience for the sort of laughter to get around it, and that was 2 years ago, and I'm still waiting.
It's been a disastrous week for Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou after his decision to put the country's EU bailout to a referendum angered EU leaders, plunging Greece into further turmoil and leading to the formation of a unity government. The money for the Greek bailout will actually come from China and the Middle East, who will be banking on Greece's strong work ethic, history of innovation, and punctual payment of taxes to recoup. We've got too much money anyway, it'll be fine. 2 points to Bridget. Phil, why aren't the fairer sex facing fairer cuts?
A bunch of pressure groups have got together and have decided that the cuts are impacting on women more than men, and that this is being statistically proven. And it has emerged that with recent polls, female support is drifting away from Mr. Cameron and the coalition, and their reaction to this is to get Theresa May to make a speech to Parliament saying, ladies are great.
That'll sort it.
Theresa May, who is, you know, a woman by dint of shoes, but is, as we all know in the Western world, a Stepford wife, robot android woman made for pleasuring right-wing, fiscally imprudent people. His reaction to this, Cameron's, when it was said that your cuts are impacting on women and there's not many women in your cabinet, his reaction on this was, during Prime Minister's question time, to have more women sitting round him for the television coverage. You know, like P. Diddy does in his videos. Yeah, I say to you that these are my bitches and my hoes.
This report that's come out is from the Fawcett Society, named after everyone's favourite Charlie's Angel, and they've accused the government of grinding down women, and I thought, oh, that's what they're feeding Osborne on.
Cameron will go on YouTube, he'll get another blitz. Do you remember all that stuff? It'll be Cameron showing his feminine side, it'll be Cameron doing the housework, Cameron picking the kids up from school.
Cameron singing Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves. Yeah.
A 20-strong coalition of charities, academics, women's groups and unions say that government cuts will mean women face the greatest risk to their financial security in living memory. Cameron's attempts at dealing with this was to arrange for women to sit in full view of the television cameras for PMQs. And when he realised there weren't enough women, he put Michael Gove in a wig.
Oh, that's really frightening now. Oh, no.
2 points to Phil. Andy, which constitutional prerogative really takes the biscuit?
This came as a bit of a shock to me that Prince Charles still has a veto over parliamentary legislation that might affect the Duchy of Cornwall. It's hard to imagine what potential legislation could only exclusively affect the Duchy of Cornwall, unless it's the Overpriced Biscuits Act or the Building Houses Out of Organic Muesli Bill. And they've been very coy about whether or not he has interfered with legislation. They're refusing to comment. I mean, my guess is that he won't have intervened, because it's not like he's the kind of person who constantly sticks his oar in all the time, is it? So
I can understand all this. We have royalty as well in Denmark, some lovely pictures of them in the papers this week, and they're made of Lego. It's it's much cheaper, and then if you get fed up with them, you can rebuild them as a tractor. It's
I saw him once, and you know he's always got those geezers with him with suits. I've always wondered, the guys that lean into him and say something and then he nods and carries on. And there's two of them and they take turns. And I wonder, what do these guys do? And what I think they do is the first one leans in and says, "You're about to talk to a poor person." This poor person is called Dave and he's a carpenter. Right, so he gives him the information of who he's talking to. And then the second person leans in and tells Prince Charles which character in The Archers Dave most relates to as a social stereotype. So first bloke goes, "It's Dave, he's a carpenter." And then the other one leans in and goes, "A bit like Eddie Grundy." And so, oh, good, okay. And then he has some context for addressing the wider world.
Or possibly the first one leans in and says, "Don't say anything." And then he says something, and the second one leans in and says, "We told him not to say anything."
Thing where he has a bloke to put toothpaste on his toothbrush. Yeah. He has a special.
Oh, that's a euphemism.
he has a Colgate Equerry to put, and you think, is that just one of those things that somehow in your childhood, just certain tasks and skills just slip past you? You never learn to do something like that. Because I can't ride a bike, and I'm 50, and I'm learning now, because I was never taught. And when you get to, like, 15, it's, like, really too humiliating. So it's taken me up until now to come out and say, I can't ride a bike, because I was never taught. And maybe it's like that with him.
Yeah.
He was never taught to put his own toothpaste on.
You don't need balance to put...
There's a degree of skill, because hand-to-eye coordination, you need two hands, for one thing. I mean, you've got to hold the brush still. You can't just have a brush and then just squeeze a tube and hope that some of it's going to land there. You've got to align the two things up.
I'd love to be Prince Charles. It'd be great to be a grown man and walk into a bathroom and say, "Has the toothpaste fairy been?"
I like the idea of the toothpaste man being ill one day and then Charles stepping out of the bathroom and Camilla seeing him just covered head to foot. "Help me! Camilla, help me! I'm so
Ministers have asked Prince Charles's permission to pass at least a dozen government bills thanks to a secret constitutional loophole known as the monarchy. The attachment of royal prerogative to the Duchy of Cornwall gives him the right to veto legislation that might impact on his private interests. These range from the salvaging of wrecks to planning laws, talking to plants, adultery, and charging £45 for shortbread.
It is quite scary, Cornwall. It's not a surprise that he's the landlord, really.
It is sort of huge, isn't it? What I always feel about Cornwall, every time I drive there, I feel like there's somebody with a rope the other end pulling it further away.
It's flipping terrifying, Cornwall. And there's nothing to do. I mean, if he's the landlord, why doesn't he create some blooming work there? There's nothing to... That's why surfing is so popular. There is so little to do that all you can do to pass the time is to stand on the sea.
I was once doing a gig in Truro, and there was a new system. BA had started these small flights from Gatwick, and so I went along, thought it was a marvellous idea. And it turned out I was the only person who thought it was a marvellous idea, and nobody else had booked, and so they'd cancelled the flight. So I said to the woman from BA, "Well, what am I going to do? I've got a show to do." She said, "Well, we'll get you a taxi." So we went out to the perfectly normal rank of black cabs and said to this man, "I'd quite like to go to Cornwall." He said, "I'll have to ring the wife." To Cornwall. It was fantastic. It cost hundreds of pounds. Courtesy of BA.
There's only one cab driver in Cornwall, old Blind Bob. I got really lost. I had to drive to Dorset last night and back, and I got really, really lost. And at one point, I got out the car, and I could feel the spray of the sea on my face. I thought, I'm on the bloody beach. I literally had driven onto the beach. It was so dark. And I had to flag down a car, and the farmer was in his Land Rover, and I asked for directions how to get to Bridport. And it was one of those moments that you tell people about, and they say, oh, what did he look like? And I say, well, bloke, sort of about 5'10", with a sort of light brown hair and a scar on his left cheek. And they'll say, that sounds like old Ted. But that's impossible. Old Ted's been dead this past 10 years.
Me, you phoned me, you just stopped the car and you said you don't mind if I wee while we chat. Is that when you phoned me?
That was before I was even lost. I was just bursting at that point. No, I pulled
don't.
Over. I pulled over for a wee in a lay-by and you rang me. I didn't ring with me thing in my hand. I'm not, I can't multitask that much. You rang and I was bursting. I said, look, I'm going to have to wee. So I put the phone in my left hand, did.
Yeah, it was the point at which Jeremy went, what are you wearing?
And at the end of round one... at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Bridget have got 4 points, but so too have Phil and Andy. And we start round two with a cutting from the Wallingford Herald.
A local grandfather is being kept awake by acorns falling on the roof of his house. He said, when you get a bit of wind, you just hear clank, clank, clank all night.
And our thanks to Verity Hickman for sending that in. Jeremy, what event this week was nothing to get worked up about?
I don't know. Give me a clue.
You might have been a bit anxious. There was a Portuguese gentleman who lost his job.
Oh, stress bunny.
Stress.
There's a man from Santander called Osalala.
Antonio Horta Osorio.
Is that him, yeah.
He's the chief executive of Lloyds Bank.
Yeah, and he's got stressed out. He should work in Streatham Branch. They're all quite chilled in there.
It wasn't just him. Does anybody else know what it was this week?
Oh, they
Bridget knows. My team first.
You're making me very stressed.
That's Stress Awareness Day.
It was.
Was it?
National Stress Awareness Day.
he resigned on that. There was a report and it said that, you know, he's been working so hard to fix Lloyd's TSB bank and he's been working round the clock. But he's been working round a Portuguese clock, which is basically 10 till 12 and then 3 till 6. So it's not actually... He's only been doing 4 days.
If they don't want us to get stressed, right, could we not please have a national don't put me on hold when I phone a call centre day? And then don't bloody tell me you're experiencing an unexpected volume of calls. It can't be that unexpected if you've already recorded a message suggesting... Anyway, the chief executive of Lloyds Bank, Antonio Horta Osorio...
Oh, very good.
...stepped very down... Good. Always say it quickly. It sounds good. Yeah. ...stepped down on Stress Awareness Day itself, which is fantastic. It's a shame we didn't rumble Liam Fox earlier in the year. He could have resigned on International Friendship Day.
Do you know what I've realised about Adam Werrity? Is that he's an imaginary friend who actually exists.
This guy who's resigned, or he's not resigned, he's just taken time off. Hmm. He's taken time off till Christmas. He makes £2 million a year. Imagine how depressed the rest of us are. The only reason we can't kill ourselves, we can't none of us afford to run a bath and have an electric heater at the same time. I've always thought there's something stressful about Lloyd's, though. The way that horse looks like it's trying to bolt.
It's up on its hind legs, isn't it?
Yes, it's always like,
It's never... Yeah.
Or like a mouse, it's just run in.
Instead of Black Beauty, I think Lloyd's symbol should be something like Flipper.
I'd like to break into a dolphinarium and record an answer phone message which says, thank you for calling the Bridport Dolphinarium. Your call may be recorded for training purposes.
Oh, we're on
if
the cutting
Jeremy
edge of satire, aren't we?
I wouldn't have thought that.
No, that's very good. This week saw National Stress Awareness Day take place. The same week, the newspapers were full of stories of teachers, bankers, and even the head of Lloyd's TSB taking time off for stress-related conditions. Teachers are among the most stressed. The new head of Ofsted has suggested giving teachers sabbaticals because of the risk of burnout. They've suggested short ones at Christmas, at Easter, one-week ones in October, February, and May, and then a massive six-week one in summer. 2 points to Jeremy. Bridget, why is an August child less likely to be august?
The Institute for Fiscal Studies have found that children who are born in August do much worse academically because they're the youngest in the year. And a year at four is a huge amount of time to a four-year-old. I've got to read you this quote from an education expert called Chris Waterman, who says that it is a fact of life. If you are the runt of the litter, you will be picked on and bullied, right? I think he's talking about children, not cats. Now, I was born in August, and I'm also the youngest of nine children.
Nine?
Yes.
Did your parents never go out?
So, this news was music to my ears, because I always thought that I was just lazy and weird, right? Because I was picked on and bullied a lot and didn't do very well at school at all. So now I have a reason for it.
Which was weird, though, the things that they came out with, the different months. I was born in May, and apparently, statistically, I have the lowest chance of captaining England at sport. I wouldn't go with my birthday. I'd go with being Danish.
That's the classic thing they do with retrofitting statistics. They say, well, most cats are black, therefore, if you are black, there's a greater likelihood of you being a cat. That is what they do. That is the way the newspapers approach statistics.
Apparently, serial killers are more likely to be born in November. So if you're about to give birth at home, good luck with that.
Work really well. That's going to stop the thick kids, because if you shag in November, the kid's due in August. So if the serial killers, nature will always out.
Yes. It's absolutely right that babies conceived now are the ones that are going to be born in August. You do not want anybody feeling randy. So Jeremy, just describe what you're wearing to the listener at home.
That is bullying. It's that's terrible workplace bullying.
A report by the Institute for Fiscal Studies shows that those born in August are less likely to get good GCSEs or go to a top university compared with those born in September. The study was called Does When You Are Born Matter? And I didn't know what it was about. I was expecting results along the lines of, well, pre-Renaissance, things were a little bit bleak. 2 points to Bridget. Phil, who will be out in force if it freezes?
The government have prepared, because the climate's been a bit doolally, and they reckon that we're going to be entering something of a cold snap. I think January, it's going to go really, really cold. They developed a four-point alert plan for coldness. And at level four, it has been said that they're going to have the army out helping the emergency services. And the levels are as follows, and this is the government guidelines. Level one, wrap up warm. No. Level two, pop the kettle on. Level three, walk up to the thermostat, tap it three times, shake your head. And level four, slice open a fat relative and sleep in their steaming entrails.
I can't think sending in the army to have a war on snow is a good idea. It's going to be like Afghanistan. They're going to get hopelessly bogged down in the snow. They'll be there for 10 years saying, well, at least we've improved women's rights.
Yeah. Also, they're supposed to have no equipment. They'll be there bayoneting snowdrifts. It'll be pointless.
On the subject of our forces, there are no British warships guarding our waters for the first time in 30 years this week. So if anybody wants Portsmouth, it's yours for the taking.
Yeah, it's just Daily Mail readers in pedalos.
Do you remember when weather was just something that happened?
Yeah.
Now it's a national humiliation, isn't it? That's really what all this is about, isn't it? You know, we've got to prepare for snow, and the most important thing about being prepared is knowing who to blame it on.
But also, I'm not sure I feel confident about all things, because the government's antifreeze salt stock includes a strategic reserve of 400,000 tonnes held at key port locations. And you just think, oh, fingers crossed, they're not just referring to the sea. The army will be on standby this winter as part of the government's emergency plans for coping with another big freeze. The army will be called in when crisis level 4 is reached. Nobody is keen to talk about crisis level 5, which is when we have to set fire to the Midlands to keep warm. 2 points to Phil. Andy, have a listen to this. Set you free. Andy, whose bowling has been proved to be just not cricket?
Well, this is a very, very sad story about match fixing in cricket. I think a lot of people realised a few years ago that match fixing was prevalent in Test cricket because England started winning. And that's not normal, you know. I mean, I'm part of a generation who grew up honestly believing that England Test collapse was one word. It's very difficult to spot match fixing in cricket because there's a game with so many elaborate rules. But I suppose there must be certain telltale clues. Like, for instance, if the ball hits someone on the pads, you know, right in front of the wicket, and the first person who shouts, "How's that?" is the batsman. That must be a bit of a giveaway. The scam hinges around something called spot betting. And I don't understand what kind of idiot accepts a spot bet. Someone walked up to you and said, "I would like to bet on the third ball of the first over being a no ball." You'd smell a rat, wouldn't you? Surely.
The reason that they tumbled it was the bloke that went in and he said, "I am betting that the fourth ball of the sixth over will be a Terry's chocolate orange."
Maybe they're more subtle. Maybe what they say is, "I'd like to bet $5 on the second ball of the fifth over being a no ball and $5 on the fourth ball of the sixth over being a no ball and $20,000 on the third ball of the first over."
And what we've done, Andy, through this rambling is we've made this question about cricket as dull as the game itself.
Pakistan cricketers Mohammad Amir, Salman Butt and Mohammad Asif have all been sent to jail for fixing play. The three plotted to deliberately bowl no balls during a Lord's Test match against England last summer. A no ball is called when part of the bowler's foot crosses the popping crease. The popping crease is where they make popcorn. Honestly, I have no...
That was an absolutely marvellous announcement there from Sandy Toksvig on the news, Chris. What did you think of that one, Andy Hamilton, who's joined me in the box here this afternoon?
Well, I thought her delivery was a little
absolutely
bit stilted.
At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Bridget have got 8 points, but so too have Phil and Andy. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from the Radio Times.
Bizarre ER. A footballer's tackle leaves him with a broken leg.
And our thanks to Stuart Rees for sending us that. Jeremy, who thought Torquay's nice this time of year?
Well, this is interesting, because your man, what's-his-face, has been doing a thing.
You're listening to the Rees lecture.
What it turns out is that the very first human beings in Europe who came from Africa, we all came from Africa, which makes racism pointless apart from anything else, and the very first ones in Europe so far that have been found is in Torquay, which proves that the cream tea actually comes from Ghana. And it should be made with yam. And with jam and cream on it. But they found this bit of jawbone in the 1920s and they couldn't test it properly because somebody glued the teeth back in, so they couldn't do carbon dating on it. But they found a new way of testing it and they found out that it's 44,000 years old. And that proves that human beings and Neanderthals lived together, which you can also tell if you spend Saturday night in Torquay. And apparently they actually commingled. They courted, shall we say.
Can you stop looking at me and Phil as you're saying
that? The bit I didn't understand is that the tiny fragment of jawbone was excavated from Kent's Cavern, which in 2000 was awarded Show Cave of the Year. How big a competition is this? Is there like an ideal caves exhibition that you can go to?
Sandy, do you not read What Cave?
A piece of human jaw found in Torquay is thought to be the earliest remains of a human found in Europe. The presence of Homo sapiens this far in humanity's past tells us that they might have mingled with Neanderthal man. Scientists had believed that Homo sapiens first settled in southern Europe and took thousands of years to reach Britain. Surprising, as normally the French trains are pretty good. So, 2 points to Jeremy. Bridget, what are women technically capable of?
We're technically capable of fixing cars.
Oh, calm yourself, my dear, you're hysterical.
But the problem is that we're not really interested in doing that, so we don't.
Is that what it is?
Yep. That's what somebody has found out.
Yep. The study found that women can do any skill apart from missing the toilet entirely when weeing. That is the only...
It takes a lot of practice, actually, Sandy.
Yeah. And so what makes you think we do that accidentally?
Ladies can't fix cars because they're always fainting, surely.
2 weeks ago, I fixed my washing machine because I was motivated. Mind you, I did it. Well, I spoke to a guy from John Lewis who was on the phone talking me through it. But it took ages because my battery on my mobile phone had gone. So I had to keep going to the home phone to talk to him and then running all the way to the washing machine, which is actually in the laundrette, which was about 2 miles away.
Well, I mean, I think similarly, men are probably just as good as women at moaning and earning 30% less for every job, but they just choose not to.
You can't.
Yes. The motivation being, thank you for fixing my car. Would you like to see my knickers?
Actually, they focused on cars, but yeah. A woman invented the windscreen wiper.
She did, Mary Anderson.
Exactly. Mary. In New York, walking along the pavement, fainting, and then she noticed that drivers had to lean out of their cars to see where they were going in heavy rain and snow.
So of course she invented the windscreen. Of course it was a woman. Up until then, men had just been going, don't be silly, dear, I can see perfectly well.
Yeah. I bet a woman invented directions as well, didn't they? Perfectly well without directions. We didn't ask strangers. We just drove until we found somewhere. We stopped and we stayed there forever.
I once had a woman knock on my door and she said, before mobile phones, she said, can I use your telephone because I've got a flat tyre? I said, oh, don't be so silly. I went out and I changed the tyre for her because honestly, it's not that difficult. She turned up the next day with a dozen bottles of wine. I said, could you please break down here again tomorrow? It's absolutely...
Women are brilliant with cars, much better than men with manoeuvring and stuff. The way they can balance shopping on the roof as they drive around, I think it's...
Professor Frank Schmidt of the University of Iowa has concluded that women are just as capable as men at performing technical tasks, but choose not to, leaving men to pick up the slack, something we women call outsourcing. Men's greater aptitude for manual tasks is apparently due to stronger motivation. The motivation presumably being the roof is leaking and I forgot to get home insurance like she told me to. 2 points to Bridget. Phil, have a listen to this. That was one of Doris Day's later recordings. Phil, why wasn't sailing on a cloudy day a saga?
Zeppelin. Dude. They have discovered that the Vikings talked about something called the magic guiding stone or something in their writings. And they thought, oh, you wacky Vikings. And they have found that there is a particular crystal, which is called Iceland Spar, which is not... where Bjork buys her boil-in-the-bag cod. It's a crystal that polarises sunlight, and so even on a cloudy day, if you twist it the right way, it will show you to within 1 degree of where the sun is in the sky. And so they did have this stone that they used to navigate their way and take their horny helmets to far-off lands.
But they didn't wear horny helmets.
They didn't wear helmets. Yes.
It's one of those kind of strange...
Victorians invented that.
Yes, yeah, sort of strange.
Did they?
Yes. Yeah.
But well, that sucks.
But what did they do when they got to America? Because it said they discovered America, which was, you know, irksome to the Iroquois and Blackfeet and so forth, who were already there. It's like, oh, we found your country. Oh, thanks. That's great. We've been looking for it for ages. But they discovered America. They didn't. Did they stay? Did they found
maybe,
a little?
Maybe the Iroquois and the Blackfeet were Vikings. Yeah. Because, I mean, Normans are Vikings, aren't they? They're Norsemen. Yeah. They became Normans. And you think, I can't think of two more disparate people than people from Normandy and Swedes. You won't find anyone in Normandy who would countenance a sandwich without a top on it. And I mean, so maybe they'd been there before, centuries before, and maybe they, the Iroquois, I mean, obviously I'd need to do more research to back this theory up.
I don't know why we think this is some new thing that we've only just discovered this. How do they think I got here? They did astonishing things. You know, they had the sunstones, and then they had all these to while away the hours and the long voyages. They invented Mastermind. They're extraordinary people.
They invented IKEA. Parliament,
IKEA,
didn't they?
Yeah.
Vikings climbing out of their own long boats with their Allen keys.
The term
have come to put together your wardrobe. Would you like a meatball?
The term Viking.
I know we don't have the horny helmets. They were invented by the Victorians. In about 1,000 years.
It's like my granny was in the room. New research at the University of Rennes in Brittany suggests that the Vikings managed to navigate thousands of miles on cloudy days and at night by using sunstones. The stone, which is a transparent form of calcite, helps give a general location relative to the sun and is still used by parcel express delivery vans. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
This one was tweeted to me by Paul Cardin, and it's from the BBC website, and it refers to the Qantas strike. And it says, aircraft currently in the air will complete their flights.
Ms. Christie.
I have a letter sent in by Ellie Elsdon, and she's actually sent a letter that was sent to her deceased father-in-law from HM Revenue and Customs, which says, dear Mr. Elsdon, thank you for sending us your tax return for the year ending 5th of April 2011. I'm returning to you your death certificate that you enclosed with the tax return. Please note that in future you do not need to send us this document unless we ask for it.
Mr. Jupiter's.
Thanks very much to Robert Cornish for sending this in from the On This Day column in the Western Daily Press. 1553, Mary Tudor proclaimed queen, and Lady Jane Grey, a Protestant, was sent to the Tower where she was beheaded on February the 12th, 1554. She died in 1558.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Bridget have got 12 points by a fluke. Phil and Andy are this week's winners with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the BBC News website sent to us by Simon Maloney.
Polar bears are cool, said MP Pat Martin, but it was the relentless pursuit of beaver that opened the Great Northwest.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Jeremy Hardy, Bridget Christie, Phil Jupitus and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and Gareth Quinn, with additional material by Andy Walton and Tom Crowley. The producers were Victoria Lloyd and Lindsay Fenner.